Hello, my name is Sarah Weiner. I'm a third year medical student, and I'm here today, we're switching gears just a little bit, and I'm here to talk to you about tick-borne illness in an endemic area in the context of some treatment models and public education. I have no relationships to disclose. So the way this project came to be was that there were a few medical students, myself included, from UMass Medical School, as well as a couple of graduate school of nursing students, and another student from UMass School of Pharmacy, and we were all able to come together as an interdisciplinary group under the Rural Health Scholars Pathway, which is a pathway for students and healthcare professionals who are interested in practicing in a rural area. So this was about a year ago, and during that time we spent 2 weeks in this clerkship on Martha's Vineyard, working with the Martha's Vineyard Public Board of Health to explore tick-borne illness on the island, which had become a big issue for them. So they were very happy we were coming and waiting for us, and they specifically wanted us to approach this project focusing on the three things you see at the bottom there. They really wanted us to go out and just survey the public to get a better understanding of just what did people know about tick-borne illnesses, what were their perceptions of the risk that they had, and just to get a little bit more knowledge. They also wanted us to reach out to the groups they considered to be high risk, including the youth and outside workers. And then lastly, they were hoping that we could spend some time interviewing the healthcare providers on the island, the physicians and nurse practitioners, the pharmacists, to get a better understanding of how they saw tick-borne illness on the island. So here's Massachusetts, my home state. So in general, in the nation, in 2011, the incidence of Lyme disease was about 7.3 per 100,000. In Massachusetts, that same year, it was 27.3 per 100,000, and that does tend to vary because Massachusetts has been as high as in the 60s per 100,000 in the past few years. But these two here, this being Martha's Vineyard, this being Nantucket, these two islands here, they tend to have a much higher incidence. It's a little bit more difficult to tack down the numbers, and I'll get to that. But we specifically went to the Vineyard, and this island is about 100 square miles. It is home to six towns. Who came together in this project to as the Board of Health to really try to get a sense of what they were dealing with tick-borne illnesses on the island. The island is home to 15,000 year-round residents, and that number fluctuates upwards to about 100,000 residents in the summertime. So the questions that we focused on in this project were, how do the island caregivers diagnose and treat major tick-borne illnesses? How do we report that to the CDC, to the Department of Public Health? What's the process, what's the procedure for reporting these illnesses? And can that be improved in some way? How does the island work to balance prophylactic treatment versus symptomatic treatment? And is there disparity there in what they were seeing and reporting in those numbers? And then finally, what's the current state of public education regarding tick-borne illness? And how can they best use the resources they had at this time under this grant to increase the public's awareness? I'll touch upon all four points. I'm going to primarily focus on the fourth. And then just to give you a quick overview, the main tick species on Martha's Vineyard are the two there over on the left, deer ticks, which carry Lyme disease, which tend to get the most publicity. They also can carry a disease called anaplasmosis and another called babesiosis. So that was something that was interesting to know. You can be bitten by the same tick and get more than one disease. And then dog ticks are also on the island. They're a little bit bigger. They're a little easier to see. And they carry mainly tularemia and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. The important thing there to understand is if you have a dog tick on you, it wasn't that dog tick that gave you Lyme disease, because it doesn't carry Lyme disease. And then some general, just for general knowledge, for anyone who may travel to Martha's Vineyard or another endemic area in the future, just good to know what to look for. And the tricky thing about Lyme disease is that the general, if you know that you've been bitten by a tick, then you take it off and you start to feel symptoms like muscle aches, fever, fatigue, malaise, it may not really mean much to you. You may just think you're having a tired day. But those are really the symptoms that you would want to present to the doctor with. Those could indicate that you have been bitten by a tick that was carrying Lyme disease. And some of the other symptoms, the neurologic symptoms, tend to come a bit later. They're not as common. Pain, Bell's palsy is a muscle weakness, and memory loss. And like I said, they don't happen all the time. And then the skin rash, which I can show you on the next slide here, it's called erythema migrans or the bullseye rash. It's pretty telling if you get it, but literature suggests only about 3 out of 4 people ever have this rash. And if you think about it, if you get it behind your neck or behind your knee, you may never see this rash. So getting to the first question, how do the island caregivers diagnose and treat the major tick-borne illnesses? We approach this by going out in pairs and trying to talk to as many of the doctors on the island as possible. A lot of nurse practitioners, we spoke with a bunch of pharmacists, and there were things that people agreed on and there were things that people didn't agree on. All the providers acknowledged that there was a problem with tick-borne illness on the island. And another interesting thing that they seemed to agree on was that about, I would say, less than half of the people showing up with Lyme disease ever remembered having this rash. So where the literature suggests that it was higher, the providers themselves felt like this wasn't necessarily true, wasn't what they were seeing. And then in terms of treatment, there was this sort of better safe than sorry approach that some providers had that was not necessarily the case with everyone. And what I mean by that is, if you have someone who's bitten by a tick, and they know they had a tick on them, they take it off, and they bring it to you, but they're not showing any symptoms, do you treat them or do you not? You're on Martha's Vineyard, you're in an endemic area. You know, many providers on the island felt you give them prophylactic treatment, whereas others did not. And so there was really not a standard of care in that way. And the other part of the treatment that providers didn't necessarily agree upon were children under 8. The standard treatment for Lyme disease is doxycycline, an antibiotic, which is known to cause teeth discoloration in children under 8. And so there was really a disagreement there about what's best to give. You know, can you give this if you don't give it for long enough to cause the discoloration? So there, we found some things there that people were not uniformly agreeing on. And the other thing that everyone really did have concern about were visitors, because since these symptoms aren't very specific and you may not have something as obvious as a rash, there was concern for people who were coming in the summer, that huge flux of people that come in the summer to visit. Were they getting enough education that when they left, if they started to develop these symptoms, they could tell their doctor at home, I think I might have Lyme disease, or would it just go unknown? So we made recommendations, and for this particular question, one of our biggest recommendations to the Board of Health on the island was to request that they start to have conversations about putting together a group that would work on a standard of care for the island, especially because there are only 15,000 residents year-round. That only requires a certain number of doctors, but when there are 100,000 on the island in the summer months, when tick-borne illness is at its peak, and those providers may or may not be familiar with Lyme disease, it's very important to have a standard of care. And it was clear from talking to people that it would take a lot of discussions to decide what that standard of care would be. So we suggested that at least they initiate those conversations, and then some other ideas for conferences. This here was created by ZPH. It's a really great manual about tick-borne diseases, and we just recommended that any of these new providers coming in the summer be given that and requested to read it so they know a little bit more. The second thing was about the CDC reporting. So how does this get done on the island? Is it even important? And again, we asked providers, how are you doing this? And if you have someone that's got Lyme disease and you know they do, how are you reporting this to the CDC? And it was felt, especially again by the group that was doing this, that was working under this grant, that having capturing the true burden of Lyme disease on the island was extremely important, especially if they were hoping to get future funding to continue to work on this. And if the true burden isn't being captured, it's hard to sell the point that you need the funding. So we did find that there were a lot of misconceptions. One of the things that jumped out to me the most during this whole project is that we got to a number of about 200. They thought that the number was right around 200 to 300 people that had confirmed case of Lyme disease in the 1 year period that while we were there. Then when we spoke to the pharmacists, they had given 1,200 doses of doxycycline during that same period. And they estimated, to be fair, that probably about 1,000 of those were for treating Lyme disease. So if only 200 were confirmed cases, but there were over 1,000 doses of treatment given, there's definitely some sort of misconception happening here. There's something wrong with the reporting. So when I say here misconceptions exist regarding requirements, when we talk to offices, sometimes they felt that, well, if we do a test for Lyme disease and it comes back positive through the lab, wouldn't the lab have already reported it? And the lab would say, that's not how we do things here. And in the bigger hospital, there was a little bit of that. Also, the form for reporting was on paper. That never seems to work. It just sits in a pile. It's the busy season. They're getting slammed, especially in the emergency room. They just weren't having time to fill out the papers. And from what I understood, it was a pretty extensive report. So that was the general findings from looking into the reporting. And so what we recommended to them was that to get started, there really needs to be clarification right away. And one way we thought that they might be able to do that was to just start a small summer public health intern position to really streamline the process, figure out where the problems were, talk to people about how this could best be done. We really thought that if there was a way to go to a computer reporting in some way, that would really help. And then eventually this could hopefully be rolled into an island-wide position. It's definitely something that would take a bit of time. It would help if all of the offices could come together and work on one streamlined way of doing this. But those were the big recommendations for how to start pressing forward with reporting to the CDC. This next point was actually the focus of our pharmacy student. And so I'll touch on it only briefly, but she wanted to know how could the island work to get prophylactic treatment versus symptomatic treatment. So again, the same question of if someone comes into you and they know they've had a tick bite within the past 72 hours, but they aren't feeling any symptoms, do we treat them or do we not? And so she went and asked the pharmacist on the island, well, what did you think of that? She brought them a survey, and this is the survey here. She asked questions comparing other prophylactic type treatments, asking if they were familiar with them and how they felt about them. And she found universally that the pharmacists on the island supported this. I can definitely give information if you wanted to talk more about this, but from what I understand from her, this is much, this is a very early step. There's much red tape that would have to be gone through to ever get prophylactic treatment with doxycycline. I have infectious disease doctors back at school that would squirm if they saw this slide, so I think there's a lot that would need to happen, but it was a really interesting conversation. The last point was something I wanted to focus on a little bit more, the nearest and dearest to my heart. When we originally got there on the island, they thought, oh, well, wouldn't it be great if you could go out and survey the public? And thought maybe we could get 100 or 200 surveys. The only way onto the island is by ferry, unless you have a boat, but most people don't. And so you have this perfect audience that's stuck on a boat that you can just follow around with a survey and hope that they'll let you talk to them. Much to our surprise, we ended up with almost 1,000 surveys, which we were very grateful for. People were extremely receptive. We did a lot of surveying on the ferry. We also went to the local school. We went to the high school and the health classes. We went to English as a second language class. And then we found that a lot of the at-risk outside workers were from the Brazilian community. So we went to some of the churches there that were Brazilian community churches. And they were very receptive. And we went and surveyed and spoke with people there as well. Then we sort of took all of the 945 surveys that were on paper and input them into the computer, and then spent time analyzing our findings. And we decided to do this a little bit by group. So I'm going to skip through the island-wide group, and focus, in the interest of time, focus on the high-risk outside worker findings, the tourists, and there's actually a slide in here about the island youth that I'll talk about as well, and then go into some recommendations. And this was just a quick look of the survey participants. The majority, about two-thirds, were full or part-time residents. The blue square there is tourists or visitors. And then the red are non-residents, but not tourists or visitors. So this was generally people that were coming onto the island to work during the day, but not residents of the island. So I'm going to skip through these. they're a bit redundant. So the youth findings, so most of these surveys came from the high school health classes, although there were a good number of kids on the ferry as well. A good number of kids take the ferry off island and attend school on the mainland. And so we were able to get a pretty good sample size of kids between the ages of 5 and 18. The findings were a little bit surprising. We found one of the more surprising ones to me was that 1 in 4 had been treated for a tick-borne illness in their lifetime. That is a very high incidence, and certainly much higher than the numbers that you see on the state website suggest. And more than half of them reported that a family member had been treated in the past. Despite that, only 37% believed they were at risk, which isn't too surprising when you're talking about kids. It's hard to imagine that you could be at risk for a tick-borne illness. Actually, very surprisingly to me was that over 50% hadn't received any educational material. The island does do a pretty good job of trying to make that a part of what they teach their kids in their schools. So as a part of our recommendation, we thought, again, this is something that would have to be done, I'm sure, through committees and over time, but one recommendation we had for them was, we know that you do give out material in schools, but what about making this a standard part of your curriculum? So these were just examples, but what about if 1st, 4th, 7th, 10th graders, as a part of the standard curriculum for them, you give them information about tick-borne illnesses, and how to treat it, what to look for, and they get that regularly. The other thing was that any new student that comes into the school system should be given a packet with this information in it from the school nurse to take home to their families. Then the outside workers, so the high-risk outside workers were landscapers, construction workers, and anybody that checked off the box that they were other outside worker. That was sort of how we stratified them to use the numbers. These numbers were also a little bit scary. About 50% didn't know if they were at risk or felt they were not at risk at all for tick-borne illness. Now, these are people who are standing outside in the tall grasses all day long. They're very much at risk. 57% said that they almost never or never wear protective clothing. Another quarter said that they never check their skin for ticks when they come inside. And then the last one to me stood out the most, that a quarter of them said they would not seek medical treatment even if they had taken a tick off and then had flu-like symptoms. Which would be, something you'd think about right away, worrying about having Lyme disease. And then this graph here just shows the percentage of high-risk workers who had self-reported being treated for a tick-borne illness either once or more in their lifetime, and these numbers are extremely high. Even with someone being treated more than 5 times in their life. So our recommendations here were, and in general, the clergy, we talked to them about this, and the community leaders were very receptive to this idea. The idea of really training them and having them be a resource for the community, not only about information, but about where to go or how to receive care if you think that you may have Lyme disease or another tick-borne illness, what to look for, what symptoms and signs. And then another idea that we thought might be useful was to approach some of these employers. So some of the companies like the landscaping companies where all of their crew members are outside all day long, the idea to approach them and say, listen, you have all your workers out here all day. It would really benefit you and your workers to give them the information they need annually. So you're annually educating them on what to look for. And then the churches and the classes that we went to, in fact, I myself went to the English as a Second Language class, and they were asking us to come back and talk again. So there certainly was a desire for the information. And then the tourist findings, another kind of interesting, maybe not surprising result, but glaring. So it wasn't a surprise to us that tourists may lack information about tick-borne illness. But almost 3/4 couldn't tell the difference between a wood tick or a deer tick. They didn't know the symptoms of early or late Lyme disease. This is one of the scariest ones to me, people coming onto the island that didn't even know, 63% not even knowing that it would be an issue that they should even look out for on the island. And then, not surprisingly, but most hadn't received any education. I mean, I can see how you wouldn't if you weren't from the area have received the education, but I think one of our recommendations was to make sure that once people were coming onto the island, they were getting some education about it. So our recommendations in this respect were to one of the biggest things was you come onto this island on a ferry. So get some permanent posters up on that ferry so people understand, you know, what to look for, what these ticks look like, what the symptoms are. We also thought about, sorry, I guess my 20 minutes are up. We also thought about some public service announcements at local movie theaters or on the TV channels, and hanger tags in like bed and breakfast and hotels that you could put on the door or put on the showers, just with your basic information about when would you want to call your doctor, what would you look for. And so my overall recommendations are just a bit of a summary of what I talked about today. So the first being that we really encouraged the group we worked with to think about forming an island provider task force so that there could be some type of standard of care when dealing with tick-borne illness diagnosis and namely treatment, and then to work with the CDC reporting guidelines and figure out exactly what's needed and how can they best get those needs met so that reporting can be done in an appropriate way, and so that the true burden of Lyme disease and tick-borne illness on the island is actually being captured. And then lastly, to undertake some of the many public education efforts that we found the islanders could benefit from. That was about it. I just want to say thank you very much to Dr. Cashman, who's been here with me every step of the way. And I'm happy to take any questions.
I was wondering, you spoke about the Lyme disease symptoms and prophylactic treatment. Is there as much emphasis on all the other tick-borne illnesses?
There's not as much emphasis. They don't see them as much. They're not quite as common. But on the island in particular, there's more than there is in Massachusetts in general. On the island, the providers know a lot more about all those diseases. And so one thing that I'm not sure if I mentioned it or not, but when we talk to the providers, one thing they are doing is instead of just testing for Lyme disease when someone comes in with a tick bite, now they test the whole panel. And they said they're surprised to see that occasionally they have someone who's got more than one tick-borne illness. So now that was sort of in the same better safe than sorry. They're kind of, the providers who've been on the island for a long time are tending to do that more often. Thank you.